The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Everything starts with a design. Art, fashion, architecture, just about everything. Wouldn't you like to know more about what inspired the designer and why they designed something as they did? Welcome to Dishing the Dirt on Design with hosts Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. We'll speak to some of the most renowned names in the field of design, along with Ann and Eleanor's comments and flair. Let's get started. Here's Ann and Eleanor.
Hello, I'm Eleanor Schrader Schapa, and welcome to Dishing the Dirt on Design. Today, our guest is costume designer and historian Deborah Nodulman Landis. She has designed 16 movies for filmmaker John Landis, including Animal House, The Blues Brothers, and Coming to America, for which she was nominated for an Academy Award. She has worked with director Steven Spielberg, for which she designed the iconic fedora and jacket for Harrison Ford in Indiana Jones, and she's also worked for Louis Malle and Costa Gavras. One of the most famous images of the 20th century is her design, Michael Jackson's red jacket for Thriller. She received her master's in fine arts degree in costume design from UCLA and her PhD in the history of design from the Royal College of Art in London. She is a 30-year member of the Costume Designers Guild, for which she served two terms as president. She holds the David C. Copley Chair and is the founding director of the David C. Copley Center for Costume Design at UCLA's School of Theater, Film, and Television. She's also the author of several books, most recently Hollywood Sketchbook, A Century of Costume Illustration. And she was the senior guest curator for the blockbuster exhibition entitled Hollywood Costume at the Victorian Albert Museum in London. So welcome, Deborah, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me, both of you.
Oh, we're just thrilled.
You're very welcome. Deborah, we're delighted that you're here, and I want to start out with a question right away. How did you become interested in the field of costume design? Was it from the time you were a little girl?
I think in utero.
Oh, in utero.
I mean, you just read my credits, and I thought, have I really done all of that?
Yes, you do.
It had to have been in utero. I think no one was more surprised than my mother. I must have been making costumes from the time I was born, and I'm sure many people listening to your show who are naturally interested in design may be just like me, and I'm sure this will resonate. Yeah, I think I was born this way. I know I was born this way. From the time I could hold a pair of knitting needles, from the time I could cut and paste scrap paper, from the time I could hold a Elmer's glue, a tape, anything, I was making clothes, doll clothes, clothes for myself, costumes at school, from utero, from forever.
That's terrific. That's called a born creative person, very talented.
I don't think I had a choice.
Right.
And so you've been sewing since you were a little girl, and then did you sew for all your friends and create your own costumes?
And it wasn't so much about, I must say, it was never so much about ordinary clothes, and it wasn't about, yes, I did make a Harlequin costume in third grade for my friend Sharon Boonshoft, but it wasn't so much about that for me. It was really about the story. So I was, I would say, as much as I am about the hands, mm-hmm. I'm also all about the head.
Oh yeah.
So what I would like to say, it was always about a story. So dressing up as somebody. Gosh, I just loved history so much. And
yes.
Those people in history books, history was my best subject. They never seemed like they were dead to me. I just always saw them as people in stories, as people who were real.
Yes.
So it was very much connected.
Yes. And you're talking to two historians here, too, so we love hearing that these people are real to us, you know? Oh my.
I always tutored history, and I never had a separation in my head between what happened then and life now.
Well, we would love to hear all about the Hollywood Costume Exhibition at the Victoria and Albert Museum. How did it all come about? How did you become involved?
I had an idea about creating an exhibition from all the way from the beginning of Hollywood history, 100 years, a century of Hollywood costume design coming to life. And I thought about doing it here, naturally, in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
and pitched it, and nobody seemed to get it. And I must say, that's where that old testament saying you're never profit in your own land. I couldn't get anybody interested in it, and I think it was because the industry really lives here in
mm-hmm.
Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I had done my doctorate at the Royal College of Art, and the Victoria and Albert Museum is the greatest museum of art and design in the world.
I know.
Right. And my doctorate was in the history of design. So I went to my advisor, who is rector of the Royal College of Art, Sir Christopher Frayling, and he said, let's pitch it to the V&A.
Hmm.
And we did, and I started working on the Hollywood Costume Exhibition in 2007. It opened in October 2012 and just closed on February 1st, 2013. So this just recently closed. So I'd been working on this for 5 years.
5 years.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary. And the V&A only puts on the finest of exhibits, so that shows how outstanding your work is.
Well, it's the pantheon of
That's
design.
Right. It's the pantheon of all kinds of clothing design, costume design, historical design, everything. So it's extraordinary, and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
So take us through from step one through everything that you did and how you put all this together and what costumes you chose, and tell us everything.
Well, here's the thing. The first question should be, how did you choose what would go in the exhibition? How do you make a decision about what goes in the exhibition? And the first thing I did was to start to talk to my mother, my mother-in-law, my kids, my friends. Had we known each other then, I would have asked you, what movies mean the most to you?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go looking for the clothes first, because movies are very, very emotional. And what I wanted was a living exhibition. I didn't just want to go down a list of iconic clothes, Breakfast at Tiffany's, The Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
Those actually all appeared in the exhibition later, but I wanted movies that meant something, meant so much to people. And I started creating a list, very much like the American Film Institute list or the Library of Congress list of the 100 most important movies. After I had a list, after I had an idea of what I should include, what films I should include, that's when the hard part became evident, that there aren't that many clothes from those films
mm-hmm.
still in existence. So I started looking for clothes, and of course the first person I went to was Debbie Reynolds.
Oh yes, yes, of course.
Because Debbie Reynolds had the largest private collection of costumes in the world.
Fascinating. I never had heard that.
Oh, sure. Debbie's costume collection was absolutely world famous, and she had things like the white dress from The Seven-Year Itch. She had the ascot dress from Cecil Beaton's design for My Fair Lady for Audrey Hepburn. She had Hello, Dolly, the fabulous costume that was worn by Barbara Streisand. She had incredible things in her collection. And so Debbie said, come on out to the middle of California where I have everything stored. And I had my conservator come and my team come from the V&A, and this was in now 2008. Mm-hmm. They all came to California. We rented a van. I cherry-picked everything, and we had the core of the exhibition. And now we started to really design the exhibition. Well, we started designing the exhibition, and then in 2011, I got a call in London that Debbie said that she was having to auction her entire collection as part of a court-ordered sale, and it had to happen in June of 2011.
Oh, no.
So the entire show, as existed, I had been working on it for already from 2007, the entire show, more or less, had to be auctioned in June.
Oh, my God.
What'd you do?
Well, it was a little bit of a disaster.
I would say much more than a little bit of a disaster.
I sat in the auction and watched her entire collection, including that white dress from the seven-year itch, be disseminated to buyers all over the world.
Oh, no.
Oh.
And why did she have to do this?
I'm sorry?
Why did she have to do this?
Because she had hoped for many years, for 30 years, to open her own museum of costume design.
I remember that.
And was never able to pull it together. And finally, she had created something in the middle of the country, never worked, and finally, at the end, she just had to sell it all.
Oh,
and it wasn't her choice.
So
I know, she
sad.
Is a wonderful, wonderful woman, Debbie.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was very sad. She wrote a beautiful essay in the Hollywood Costume Catalog about her collection. So, what to do? Watched everything go, and then I had to become a costume design archaeologist, because then I became the kind of the Indiana Jones. I designed Indiana Jones. I had to become the Indiana Jones of costume historians. I had to then retrack down all of these clothes. I had to go all over the world to track down the clothes that Demi had promised the show.
Oh, my goodness. And you did have to do all that research and all that archaeology. Were you successful for the most part?
For the most part, there is a missing costume. If somebody asked the question, was there one costume that got away? Is there one costume that you would have had in the exhibition that Debbie had promised but is now somewhere in the world? Yes, that white and black Ascot dress, Audrey Hepburn wore. And My Fair Lady is gone. So in the exhibition, I had Rex Harrison as Henry Higgins. I had Eliza Doolittle as the flower girl, so I had her as the ugly duckling. White lace dress.
Oh, my
is
goodness. Well, maybe
gone.
It'll get unearthed someplace. It'll wind up in someone's closet someplace.
I hope so. Nobody could wear it. It's a size 00.
Oh, no.
Audrey Hepburn, you can't get here. My arm can't fit into that dress, though.
So. Oh, dear.
Well, Deborah, we're looking forward to hearing so much more about the exhibition. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Dishing the Dirt on Design in just a few minutes.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com. Make your dreams come true. When you want the very best excellence and elegance in interior design, contact Ann Asher, named one of the world's top 40 interior designers by the Robb Report. Visit her website at www.annasherinteriors.com or send an email to info@annasherinteriors.com.
Tune into Goddard Design every week for everything that is arts, interior design, and architecture. Host Chris Goddard will help you explore and invite creativity into your life. Our guests will include industry leaders and insiders who take you through the entire world of design and its many facets. You may not be immediately aware, but design is involved in nearly everything we do, from homes to clothing to food and drink. Tune into Goddard Design every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
If you're a golf enthusiast and looking for some great golf properties in the desert Southwest, you'll want to make the Golf Realty Network your weekly stop. Hosted by Jane and Al Anderson, the Golf Realty Network is all about living where you play, on the golf side. You'll hear from the course pros and vendors, while the real estate side will bring you the top agents and brokers who know how to market or find your golf community home. Tune in to the Golf Realty Network, Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety, and rebroadcast weekly on Voice America Sports. Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com. You are tuned in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. For more information about our program, please visit DishingTheDirtOnDesign.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Dishing the Dirt on Design, and we are speaking with costume designer Deborah Landis. Well, Deborah, before the break, we were talking about the blockbuster exhibition Hollywood Costume at London's Victoria and Albert Museum, and we'd love to continue the conversation with you. Tell us more.
Well, it might be the only show in Victoria and Albert's history that had a film score written for the exhibition.
Oh, my.
And this, and it's going to make sense when I explain it to you. After we finished designing the exhibition, I thought, well, what kind of music are we going to have for all of these very important costumes? Here you have Chaplin's Tramp, and you have the green dress from Vivien Leigh from Gone with the Wind, designed by Walter Plunkett. And you have this fabulous Samson and Delilah peacock cape, Hedy Lamarr's dress from Samson and Delilah, and you have John Wayne from The Searchers, and you have Darth Vader, and you have Sherlock Holmes, and you have Batman, and you have Funny Girl, and you have on and on and on. You have all of these different films. What kind of music am I playing in these galleries to take the general public on this journey? Well, it became very confusing because I thought, well, I can't have Gone with the Wind under the Terminator. There is just no way, because each of these film scores are so closely identified with the movie. And as I said before, movies are so emotional. So I ended up writing a brief that went to tender and started listening to different composers' bids for a film score for this exhibition. And we had a film score written to take us on this three-gallery journey. And you heard the music outside the gallery, and when you started hearing the music, your heart beat a little faster. And when you walked in, you saw a montage of the greatest films of all time, and the costumes were then behind that screen. So you go behind the screen, and you listen to the music, you see these incredible images, and then you're swept into the exhibition very much like that suspension of disbelief that you have when the lights go down in the theater. It's part of what made the exhibition special.
Nobody does it like the V&A.
It's absolutely fantastic because it created a mood that would sweep people away and make the costumes even more meaningful than if they didn't have that.
Well, I really think that, the lack, you know, when you sit in a movie theater, you pay your ticket to go on a ride. You sit there with anticipation, the lights go down, and the director only has a few frames to totally seduce you and take you on a trip into the movie. And what I said about that V&A exhibition is that if I could have put you in boats like a Disneyland,
mm-hmm.
and taken you through this exhibition on a in a boat, I would have done that. But the music was extremely effective
at
taking people on that journey.
Oh, my goodness. Well, just so that our listeners aren't totally out of the loop on having seen this, it's now going to be going to some other museums. Could you tell us those?
Absolutely. It opens in Melbourne, Australia, in the at the Australian Centre for the Moving Image, and it's going to be there from April 20th to August 20th. And then, very happily for listeners, it opens at the Virginia Museum of Fine Art in Richmond, Virginia.
Great.
On November 2nd, and will be there through the spring when it moves to the Phoenix Museum of Fine Art.
Wonderful.
And it opens in the spring of 14 in Phoenix. So listeners will have a chance to see
Excellent.
This marvelous exhibition.
We want to see this. And will you be the curator at these exhibitions?
Oh, absolutely. I am the curator of the show.
Excellent. So we'll have a traveling Deborah Landish show.
I hope so.
That will be great. Oh, well, Anne, I know you wanted to ask Deborah about her publications.
I certainly do. Deborah is known for being a prolific writer, absolutely fantastic writer on costume design. We would love to hear about all your publications. What books have you written, and what were your inspirations for them? Could you please give us a verbal tour of these books?
Oh, a verbal tour. Well, we need some music in the back. thank you for asking, Anne. I've written 5 books, all about my subject, which I don't know if you can tell, but I'm a little passionate about it.
Yes.
Yeah. I really was so indebted and so involved with my mentors. When I started out in the business, I started in 1975, and I really had met many of these Golden Age designers, including Walter Plunkett, who designed Gone with the Wind, including Edith Head, including Irene Sheriff, who designed Cleopatra, including Dorothy Jenkins, who designed, I always stick about this, but it is The Hills Are Alive.
With The Sound of Music.
The Sound of Music.
Music.
So I knew all of these designers, and I just adored them, and they really did mentor me. So that's really why I produce these many volumes on costume design. My most recent book that just came out is called Hollywood Sketchbook, A Century of Costume Illustration. And believe it or not, it's the very first book on the subject. And it has almost 1,000 costume design sketches that were created for movies from the 20s right up until movies of 2012.
Oh, perfect.
So it's the whole century of costume design in the drawings.
How did you even tackle this?
Well, and I should say, and 100% are unpublished.
You are the archaeologist.
I am the archaeologist. Well, I had a big book come out called Dressed, A Century of Hollywood Costume Design. This is the sister volume, mm-hmm. the twin to that volume. And Dressed came out in 2007. And while I was working on Dressed, I was looking for really the Holy Trinity. I was looking for the perfect still, the iconic still from, well, let's take the 7-year itch.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking for the perfect still of Marilyn Monroe in that costume, and then I was looking for a fantastic quote from William Trevia, the designer of that costume, the perfect quote about why he designed this dress the way he did for Marilyn Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was looking for William Trevia's sketch of that dress. Well, very often the sketch was not available
mm-hmm.
because sketches were routinely thrown away once the dress had been designed.
Mm.
Right?
Oh, that hurts.
It's terrible. Terrible. Oh. I mean, I've been told that MGN, when MGN had their big auction in 1970 and they were getting rid of all of their costumes and their sketches and all of the movie memorabilia and the props and the ephemera, that the sketches were taken and the dumpsters were poured into the on-ramps for the San Diego freeway.
What a tragedy. That is wretched.
I was told that thousands of costume design sketches were used as fill.
Oh, Deborah.
For the on-ramps. Okay. So it's not surprising that when I was working on Dressed that I found a lot of sketches that were either anonymous, that didn't have a signature, that were for the second lead and not for Marilyn Monroe, everything except this number one sketch. Mm. And after looking at hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these sketches, I thought, this is incredible artwork. I need to share this with someone.
Yes.
I can't be the only one looking at these. Oh. And really, that's what Hollywood Sketchbook is about.
Oh, my goodness. I feel like calling up Caltrans right now.
Get a shovel.
And having them dig all this out. That is just amazing. And so these books are all available. If you go to Amazon or something like that, then we could purchase all of them then.
Oh, there's a lot to learn about costume design.
Yes.
And Hollywood Sketchbook is really for someone who just loves the movies and has never seen and is not aware of the fabulous artwork created for every single film.
Oh, how long did you work on this book?
About 10 years.
Oh, Deborah. Oh, my goodness.
It's seven and a half pounds. It weighs seven and a half. You can't carry two of these books.
What a labor of love. Archaeologist.
And, oh, my goodness. Well, we are so excited to hear about this, and I'm ready to just go out and buy all of them now. I know I have two of them already, so I looked through my library, and so there's Deborah Landis, and it's like, oh, we're interviewing her now. So this is wonderful. Do you have an idea for the next book now, or is there a next book? You've covered everything.
No, I haven't. Look, this shelf has been empty for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
There are some fantastic biographies out there of Adrian. There are some books on Edith Head. But other than these volumes, there's not much about film costume that's new and that's reliable. And I don't want to be lonely. I don't want to be the only one creating film craft costume design or Dressed, a Century of Hollywood Costume Design or Hollywood Sketchbook. I hope that other authors interested in art and design, interested in cinema, will look at costume design as a new field for scholarship.
You are the pioneer. You're just amazing.
Right.
You are the pioneer. And I think we need to go back to school.
Yes, and I also believe that your books, this especially with this big, fabulous exhibit at the V&A, that you will be a catalyst to get a lot more people around the world interested in this.
Absolutely.
Because it is a humongous topic, and it's marvelous, absolutely marvelous.
And so you also had an exhibition catalog as well, correct?
Yes, the exhibition catalog just won a very big prize in Europe. It's going to be published by Abrams when the show comes to tour here in Virginia. It'll be published it's called Hollywood Costume,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be published in September by Abrams. So everybody should look out for that, too.
Okay,
I can't wait to get it.
Excellent. Well, we're going to hear some more from Deborah Landis in just a few moments, so please stay tuned to Dishing the Dirt on Design, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Many people are seeking to make a difference in the world, but few actually have the tools to do so. Every week, host Mary Beth Lodge and her guests will have you thinking forward and will give you the tips to keep your life, goals, priorities, and choices on track. The result is an easier, happier, and more inspired life. The name of the program is What Matters. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. What really matters is the positive changes that you'll bring to your life and the world just by listening. Make your dreams come true. When you want the very best, excellence, and elegance in interior design, contact Ann Asher, named one of the world's top 40 interior designers by the Robb Report. Visit her website at www.annasherinteriors.com or send an email to info@annasherinteriors.com. Tune into Around the World in a Glass, presented by Sportsman's. We're a show all about wine, spirits, and other beverages. Your host, Kimber Stonehouse, is a professional expert and wine enthusiast. Each week, we'll focus on a different region of the world, discuss wines and other beverages, talk about some of the top restaurants in the region, and what to pair with which wine. Just listening could make you almost an expert. Around the World in a Glass is heard live every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. You are tuned in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. For more information about our program, please visit DishingTheDirtOnDesign.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Dishing the Dirt on Design. Today, our guest is costume designer Deborah Landis. Deborah, how did the David C. Coakley Center for Costume Design at UCLA's School of Theater, Television, and Film come about?
David C. Coakley, who is our benefactor, died, unfortunately, on November 20th, and when David died, he left the largest private collection of costume design illustrations in the world.
Wow.
And we're
and
hoping...
And what was his background that led him to that?
His passion for the movies. Mm. When we talk about costume design, we always have to talk about the movies. And very often I know that journalists engage me and they just want to talk about clothes and style, and don't realize that costume designers, we don't put pen to paper before we have a screenplay, before we have a script. And it was really David Coakley's mm-hmm. passion for the movies that led him to start collecting drawings. And his homes were covered with these drawings and covered with Cecil Beaton's, covered with Adrian's, covered with Travis Banton's and Golden Age drawings. And his collection was just enormous. And it was working on my publications, Dressed and most recently Hollywood Sketchbook, that really linked me with David. And we started talking, and it led to the founding of the David C. Coakley Center for Costume Design at UCLA. We're the only center for costume design, for costume design scholarship in the world.
Oh, that's amazing. Now, what would some of the other schools do, though? They're learning about the design itself, but not so much the scholarship?
That's right. I think that many, I know that many, many schools, Yale, NYU, Northwestern, Carnegie Mellon, to name a few, have marvelous master's degree programs in costume design, MFA programs in costume design, and we have a fantastic MFA program in costume design here at UCLA. The David C. Coakley Center really focuses on the history and scholarship behind costume design and costumes' influence on popular culture and fashion. So that's really what we do.
And it's huge.
It's huge.
Drooling.
It's absolutely huge.
Come and get a PhD, both of you.
Well, can I come hang out with you and get my PhD and have
come
you be my...
Out.
Okay,
come
that's
on.
A deal.
I'll join you, too.
Come join me.
Anne's coming,
next
too.
Year. Come on.
We'll have so much fun. I mean, because this is what my life is research, and... So, I mean, you are so enthusiastic about this, and the students are very blessed to have you, Deborah. I have to tell you this.
So they are very lucky. And tell us a little bit more about your teaching and how you've lectured all over the world, and I know you're also active in the Costume Designers Guild. Tell us everything.
Well, I don't know which first, but I have to say what's unique about my teaching, and I started teaching about 10 years ago at the American Film Institute. I teach filmmakers. I teach young directors.
Yeah.
And you can imagine that costume design, our natural constituency is not young, straight men. Right? Let's be real. So here I really teach young directors. And here at UCLA, I teach costume design to these mostly young men, but a lot of young women now, who come in for an MFA in directing. And naturally, I don't really talk about clothes. What I talk about is, okay, let me have a look at your screenplay, and together, let's figure out how to bring the people in the screenplay to life.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, every director is interested in that.
Right.
And the question I pose to directors is the same as what my colleagues are going to pose when they work professionally. Don't tell me what they're wearing. Tell me who they are.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, exactly.
If you can figure out who you are, Anne, who you are, Eleanor, who I am, Deborah,
right,
then you can figure out later what we're going to wear.
What a great way to think.
Absolutely, because then you know, you go with the flow.
It's material culture. It's more akin to anthropology than it is to fashion.
Mm.
I don't know about either of you, but I'm not dressed head to foot in Chanel.
Oh, well, darn.
Right? Well, maybe you are. I can't see you. But maybe you are all dressed in designer clothes, but most people are not. And most people in the movies are not. I mean, those clothes, we aspire to create real people. So the special thing about what I do at the Copley Center and the special teaching that I do to UCLA young directors is we look at a screenplay and we try to make great movies.
Yes, exactly. Well, and along those lines, you've been very active in the Costume Designers Guild, too. And I know that when we were talking earlier, how that you're just not appreciated enough. So let's hear more about what you think about that.
Well, I'm the immediate past president of the Costume Designers Guild. I was president for two terms, and I don't know. I tried to bring us together as a group, first and foremost. There's only one costume designer on every movie. There may be a big costume department, but there's only one costume designer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very instrumental in founding the Costume Designers Guild Awards, because I said, listen, if we just have to have a beer and pretzels at the Sportsman's Lodge, that's what it's going to be. But now there's a very glamorous Costume Designers Guild Awards, and didn't exist before I helped create it.
Uh-huh.
Right? I think this is very, very important, because if we don't celebrate ourselves, nobody is going to really give us that. And that's part of the reason why I had to do the Hollywood Costume Show. I had to write these books. So I think that we need to support each other as costume designers. I certainly encourage all of my colleagues to do interviews, to promote themselves. That's not what we're taught as costume designers. We're taught to avoid the limelight, to stay backstage, to be hidden in plain sight. Our work should disappear.
Hmm.
Costume designers are not supposed to have a definitive style. Did you know that costume designers do not put labels in the clothes?
Really?
We don't have a label. So we're unlike Marc Jacobs, unlike Ann Taylor, unlike Donna Karan, unlike any fashion manufacturer, there are no labels in our clothes. So we don't have a name. We're not building our brand. It's very hard to know which costume designer designed any film unless you're reading the credits. So we complain a lot about going unrecognized, but I really feel very strongly that we have to promote ourselves.
Absolutely. Well,
I think you are so right, and I think this is true of your set designers, your makeup people, your hair and wig people, all of them, because I don't think there is enough regard and appreciation for the people in the applied arts, and that's what this is all about, who make something superlative. You can have a fantastic actor or actress, but if the other things are not right around them, of course, with great directing and everything else like that, it's going to fall flat. And this is really important. So I'm joining your crusade. You're absolutely right.
Thank you. My daughter used to say, strike, Mommy, strike.
Right.
Well, on top of everything else, Deborah, I mean, you might as well start a whole line with the Deborah Landis label.
I know. At this point, you'd think I could, if I had a nickel for every Thriller jacket.
Oh, I know. I know. We'll just add that to one more thing you have to do.
Right, absolutely.
We're going to be back in just a few moments with famed costume designer Deborah Landis, so please stay tuned for more Dishing the Dirt on Design.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Do you find yourself tearing pictures of rooms out of magazines? Do you watch certain movies and TV programs because of the homes they show? Are Sundays reserved for open houses? Then you are a home dreamer. And someday, you will build or renovate your dream home. Steve Clipp has spent 3 decades learning how to win at the dream home game. His show, Winning the Dream Home Race, can be heard every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Let Steve Clipp help save you money and make you a winner.
Make your dreams come true. When you want the very best excellence and elegance in interior design, contact Ann Asher, named one of the world's top 40 interior designers by the Robb Report. Visit her website at www.annasherinteriors.com or send an email to info@annasherinteriors.com.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. For more information about our program, please visit dishingthedirtondesign.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Dishing the Dirt on Design, and we're hearing all about the field of costume design from designer Deborah Landis.
Our listeners would love to hear more about your work, Deborah. Some of the costumes you have designed would be great, where your inspirations come from, and especially how you approach a new project.
Many of the biggest movies that I designed were the major hits of the 1980s. And I did have a moment where I did have a huge couple of years where I designed, the Blues Brothers, Raiders of the Lost Ark, An American Werewolf in London, Trading Places, and then very shortly after that, Coming to America, and then and Thriller in the mix. So I had a very big moment in the 80s. I think Three Amigos was in there too.
Mm-hmm. These are exciting projects.
Well, and they're big movies, and most of them are comedies. And I hope that I made a huge contribution with those comedies. I think that anybody who has seen those movies remember them extremely well. They're always on television, and I hope that I helped. I think they're funnier because of my sense of humor and the wit that I brought to the costuming of those movies.
Well, you're part of popular culture, my goodness, Deborah. And just as a fun little side note, I was doing some research on you, and I heard that you've even been mentioned in The Big Bang Theory.
I know. I know. Well, it is a movie about it is a television show about nerds.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I was in The Big Bang Theory, and I think that episode is just on a continual loop because people write me from all over the world, including Moscow, who are Big Bang Theory fans who have heard my name in complete Deborah Nadulman Landis on Big Bang Theory.
Oh, my goodness. Well, then you have arrived, then.
Yeah, I do Absolutely. Think I made a contribute. I certainly do think that my
you
work...
You have
yeah.
contributed so much, and you're so lovely, and, you are so interesting to talk with, and all the information we've gotten. And then also, Ann and I, being in the design field, we have to watch a movie twice, once to see the interiors, and if they're correct in our eyes, and then again to be able to concentrate on the plot. Do you have the same thing happen to you as a costume designer?
Actually, I think the best is the reverse. In other words, I hope when I go to a movie to be completely swept into the movie and not to notice the clothes. And the best thing you can say to a costume designer is, Eleanor, Ann, you've designed the costumes for this movie, and then I'm so sorry I didn't notice the clothes. I was so involved in the movie. I cried. I was swept away by the film. But I promise you, I'm going to see the movie again this weekend with my mother. I'm taking my best friend, and I'm going to look at the clothes this time. So I think the best thing is when the interiors, the sets, the clothes, everything disappears, and all you care about is that it has a happy ending.
Yes, that's a good movie. That's
right?
A good movie. Oh, yes,
Isn't
absolutely.
That the definition of a good movie, when you forget everything, including your shopping list?
That's right.
Right. I think that is true, but not every film we go to see is an A++ movie. I find that when I look at a movie, unless it's a fabulous film that, draws me in so totally and completely, and then I go the way you're talking about it, but I notice every set, every chair, everything on the walls, the pictures, the colors, the positions and angles that it's done, and even the exterior and interior shots, if I can pick up a place that I know or something
it's hell.
Like that. And I think maybe that comes from being in this field for so many years that I notice those things. And, of course, I love clothes, and I love to put things together in a different and unusual manner. And it's like designing a room or a hotel or whatever it is. And I see that on the screen. And so maybe it's, for me, it's a busman's holiday. But I take it all in, and I love it. And that's one of the reasons why I'm saying I hope you go out and you make a big ballyhoo about how important what you are doing is. And I hope this show will really help to establish it in people's minds, because what comes out of the films, the movie industry, just sweeps through America and, of course, through the world. It has huge impact, huge selling impact and style impact of what's going to happen. So anyway, I find it all fascinating and loads of fun on top of all that.
Now, Deborah, do you have a wish list of who you'd like to work with or a period piece that you would like to do?
Well, I think every costume designer wants to work on a great movie, and you never know that until the public chooses to come or not.
Yeah.
We work on every single movie the same way. Big hits, big flops, big budget, no budget. We always hope. And I think that really defines a film artist, is that we bring 110% to every single movie. All of us, all of the creative collaborators, the production designer, the cinematographer, and the costume designer, we work the same way on every film, and we hope it's a classic.
Yeah.
And we never know, and neither does anybody else.
Yeah.
And in terms of personally, it's not going to be... It's not going to be a mystery for you to know that people who are costume designers who always work in sci-fi would like to design Jane Eyre. All of those English designers who design Jane Austen and Jane Eyre ad nauseum, all they want to do is, the Bourne trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
All they want to do is design sci-fi. If you work in period movies, if you work in sci-fi, maybe all you want to do is a contemporary comedy. I think that I would love to do something that took place in the 18th century just because I've never had the opportunity.
Oh, my goodness.
Right? So
one of our favorites.
I'd love to have the opportunity to design something like Barry Lyndon. But I think all designers get pigeonholed, and we all want to do something new, a Western, something different.
How fun. Well, Deborah, in our last minute, any final thoughts about your book, Hollywood Sketchbook?
Oh, I just think Hollywood Sketchbook is an opportunity for the general public to just see the most fabulous drawings of the last 100 years of Hollywood. It's such an unusual volume. It's a gorgeous volume, and I would just urge everyone to take a look at it.
Oh, this is wonderful. Well, Deborah, thank you so much for joining us today. It was such an honor to speak with you, and Ann and I are so fortunate that we'll be seeing you tomorrow again when you and your fellow professor and costume designer, Chrissy Carbonitas Dushenko, will be speaking to Las Donas, which is a service organization to the UCLA Alumni Association.
Well, I can't wait to see you and Ann there tomorrow. We're going to drum up some partnerships for our design fund and our program here at UCLA, and it's going to be a great event.
We're in on it.
Thank you so much. We have really, really enjoyed this, Deborah, and you have opened up our eyes to the secrets behind the costume business in movies. Thank you so much. And thank you for your multiple talents that have lit up the world.
Thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye. Well, please visit our Facebook page, Dishing the Dirt on Design, and we look forward to having you join us next time.
Thank you again for listening this week. Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schaffa will be back next Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, for another edition of Dishing the Dirt on Design on the Voice America Variety Channel. Have a great week.